typically, you know, once you build one hotel, if it becomes successful, there's always going to be a second one next door. They always play off each other. So this has been part of the conversation of downtown Bloomington. In the big scope, everyone's kind of really been looking at two hotels. That's been the whisper is, you know, we do one, we'll probably get a second one. So you have to keep that in mind. So as far as which one do you start off with first? Do you start off with a big grand hotel like the Marriott, like Uptown Normal did? I mean, that's a possibility. If the city wanted to start with baby steps, then let's do a smaller boutique hotel and see how that goes. And then if that's successful, you know, then we would look at the big grand hotel. So, you know, whether we go with the big grand or the smaller boutique, I'm open to the conversation.
What will it take to do your idea of a boutique hotel in terms of resources, in terms of construction, in terms of years?
Well, the Pantograph will remain in that building until the summer of 2016. Timing-wise, that's perfect. It gives us time to design this, work with the city to come up with a plan. So if they were to move out in June, July of 2016, and if we had everything planned out, technically the construction could start right away. We could have that done by the fall of 2017.
How much money and what sort of city participation would you be looking for?
I gave a proposal on four city blocks. I'm showing the four city block renovation that I own is a $21 million project, and that does include the Pantograph building. And we are showing a shortfall of $6.3 million. The shortfall really picks up the facade, infrastructure, curb gutters, sidewalks, streets, plants. That's where the $6.3 million goes of those four city blocks. So as far as the Pantograph building, to convert that into a boutique hotel, we are showing it at about $11 to $12 million. We also have an option now to where we could add on to that building, to where we are discussing going up two levels. Because the way it's currently designed, it has 60 rooms, and there's some concern whether 60 is enough to, you know, be that kickstart for the downtown. We keep hearing the number 100. You really need 100 rooms. So we have it designed now to where we could add two levels onto that building to hit that 100-room mark, or even another level to make it 120.
Does the structure allow for additions of floors?
It can be done regardless. We don't know right now. It would take our engineers to come in. Can we simply add on top and build up, or can we just add the structural steel? You can always add structural steel, put a new footing in, and we can go up. That would be more expensive, yes.
That also presents some architectural challenges and
yes.
Making it fit with the existing sensibility of the building.
Yes, yes, it would. We can definitely do it, and we could do something that would make it look unique and cool looking. That you could definitely do. Is it feasible? That's the question it comes down to. Do we go ahead and go with one of the other options that we're going to be proposing? We're putting together a plan now also for the larger, newer, bigger hotel so we can have another option for the city.
The city of Bloomington is, as everyone knows, rather strapped for cash. Is the possibility of future tax givebacks as your payback or your incentive to meet that $6.4 million acceptable or negotiable? What form would the city's stake in that have to take for you?
That's more up to the city to decide how they want to structure it. And I know a few people didn't like that answer. Well, you can take, Gablehausen had a structuring plan of how he supposedly was going to pay for it.
Developer Jeff Gablehausen, who had a different proposal out
yes.
there and who may come back with another one.
Yes. Well, we can take his plan also, and you can use that in our plan. I'm not here to say, you know, I think Gablehausen is asking for a bond, an upfront bond. And okay, that's one of the options for us. That's something. I don't know all the city's finances, so that's something I believe the city manager, we would sit down and structure how that should look and work.
So you're flexible as to the source of it as long as the revenue stream is there for you to break even or make a decent return?
Yes. The objective, of course, is to make money.
Wheels grind slowly in government. Is it likely that a deal can be put together by the time the Pantograph moves out? Is any further delay a deal killer, or is it something that has some flexibility?
I guess it depends who you talk to. If you're talking to David or you're talking to David's banker, there's a difference on that. A bank isn't anxious to loan money to purchase that building if it's going to sit there empty. So it does create a problem. The question has always been, what in the heck are we going to do with that building if we buy it? So it does create a slight problem. I'm trying to purchase it regardless. I believe whether it's this city council or the next city council or this mayor or the next mayor, somebody eventually is going to step up and say, you know what, we have to do something to our downtown. We're one of the last downtowns in America that is investing in their downtown.
Your relationship with the city of Bloomington has included partnerships. It has included litigation. It has included some concerns by the city, as voiced by the mayor, of code enforcement issues. Is there enough trust between you and the city to enter into a big new development agreement?
Well, I know the mayor was on your station a couple weeks ago, and I heard that, and it was deceiving to the public, and it was really really sad to hear of what the mayor had to say, misleading the public. He made comments that I've been suing the city of Bloomington for over 20 years, and I keep suing them, and there are these lawsuits. I mean, just for the record, I've only had one lawsuit against the city of Bloomington, and the lawsuit continues right now. We are on the steps of the Illinois Supreme Court.
It dates back about five and a half years.
5.5 years, exactly.
Well, let's take the other issues that the mayor raised, the code enforcement issues. He said that actually was a more concern to him about creating a reliable partnership going forward. Is that something that's surmountable?
Well, that's another sad statement. The first thing is when my attorney heard that, he said, we have no code problems. I don't know what the mayor's talking about. Why is he, my attorney asked me, why is he saying that on the radio? I said, I don't know. We have no code problems right now. The city has hit me on one of my properties with some code issues. And they made the comment, they keep giving us list. And they said, we're going to create another list. We all know it's really because of the TIF lawsuit. That is the only reason they keep messing with me on these issues. They weren't serious issues. And when I'm told, the minute you're done with that list, we're going to give you another one.
Well, is that auspicious then?
Well, what do you mean exactly?
If you're at loggerheads over TIF or code or whatever, how do you create an atmosphere of mutual trust and harmonious rhetoric so that you can march forward hand in hand, which is what you're proposing with the boutique hotel proposal?
Right. Well, the good thing is that's only the mayor talking like that. I mean, as we all know, the mayor's non-voting. It really ultimately comes down to city council. And then also you rely on the city manager. Most people don't realize that the city manager really runs the city. The mayor is more of a cheerleader, and that's what the job is, as a cheerleader, to get out there and come up with ideas and try to get everybody kumbaya. Now, unfortunately, he's not kumbaya with me. I think it's still possible to work with city council. They're going to look at the history of the Clay Dooley building that I've worked on. I was given a facade grant where last year we fixed up the exterior of the Clay Dooley. Beautiful building downtown. A lot of people love it. And, we worked together on that with the Historical Society. I referred to the McBarnes. We worked together on the McBarnes. I know in the past Steve Stockton, I believe, made a comment that the McBarnes building was what TIF was all about, of working together and restoring these historical buildings.
So you believe it's possible to rhetorically and in a public relations sense get to a kumbaya moment with the city. Do you need to reach or at least ratchet down rhetoric between you and the mayor as well to avoid presenting a mixed message?
Well, on my part, there hasn't really been any rhetoric. This is my first public discussion on this. I haven't been on a radio. I haven't been on TV. I've really been silent. I'm going to let the Supreme Court speak for me.
Which brings us to the TIF lawsuit. It is on the November docket for the Illinois Supreme Court to decide whether to take the case. You have said over the years that it's really more than about just a dispute between you and the city. You believe there's a vital public issue involved. What is that issue that has made it worth your time and money to push this as far as it has gone?
When this case first started, the first thing I had looked at is the city of Bloomington is required by law to supply something called the Illinois Comptroller Report. And that's where you account for all the expenditures, and that's how you account for TIF. So in the beginning, to where when I got some documents from the city of Bloomington in 2009, you know, I realized these documents didn't add up. There were funds missing, totals were off. The ending balance of 1 year and the beginning balance of the very next year was off by hundreds of thousands of dollars. So in the end, there was millions of dollars in discrepancy. So what started this, I had looked at the audit reports. It's something under statute. The city is to have the TIF account audited. Well, one thing I realized in the beginning of this, the city of Bloomington never had an independent audit of the TIF account, which is a violation of the statute. Now, back in 2010, when I filed this lawsuit, Mr. Greenberg had put on the city's website that he had claimed that the citizens are to believe that the expenditures of the downtown TIF were not reviewed by auditors. Nothing could be further from the truth. But I agree with him on his statement. They were reviewed by auditors. That is not compliant with the law. A review is not an audit. A review is not an independent audit. And what's important about this, their auditors every year gave a report, and they stated that the statements referenced above do not include the notes to financial statements. Our opinion is such notes are required in the accounting principles generally accepted. That's called a qualified opinion. That's a departure of GAAP, the generally accepted accounting principles. It's a violation of the TIF statute.
So you believe that there hasn't been sufficient public accounting by the city. Why is this a statewide issue of importance?
The city of Bloomington had taken 24 years of tax increment collections, and the statute requires that you're limited to 23. So what was interested during this course, at the first year of litigation, the reason this is drug out so long is that during the first year of litigation, the city denied that they took 24 years. They said, we only took 23. Everybody lost the records the first year of TIF. So the only thing we had was an auditor's note of the first year of TIF that they took in $90,000. But what I did was go to the archives in the state of Illinois. They still had the records. Then they came back and they changed their story. They said, well, under Section 3.5 of the statute, we actually get 24 years of TIF. That was two more years of argument.
The appeals court actually bought the city's argument on that, that property taxes are incurred in 1 year and paid in the next.
Yes. The statute is specific to an ad valorem tax collection. So you're limited to 23 ad valorem tax collections. So yes, the confusion really gets into when people start talking about property levies.
Sometime this month, you'll know whether your case remains a live one.
Yes, definitely. So to clean this up, what we're looking at the Supreme Court is, what does the statute allow? How many ad valorem tax collections? The appellate court agreed with Rebecca Foley and said that technically it can go indefinitely, that a TIF can go forever. Now this has become a state issue.
Circuit
forever.
Court Judge Rebecca Foley.
Yes.
Have there been other instances around the state of that coming into play?
If a TIF is not limited to 23 years, this affects everyone in the state of Illinois. We have 1,300 TIFs in the state of Illinois. Chicago has about 155 TIFs. The question is, you know, is it 23 or is it 24? The TIFs throughout the state take in about $1.3 billion a year right now, all of the TIFs. So it's an important question to all citizens in the state of Illinois.
There are other governing documents about TIFs, though, that indicate a TIF will have a certain sunset. So it's unlikely to be more than a year's worth of taxes, right?
I mean, Rebecca Foley said it can go indefinitely. It's an important question.
David Bentley is a prominent downtown Bloomington landowner and developer who's proposing a boutique hotel and perhaps other things in that district. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Charlie, thank you.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.